Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support, and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the 10th episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. We've got some possibly the most important guests we'll ever have on this podcast, eh, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd said from the outset, didn't we, that we wanted to, at the end of each series, we wanted to have quite a special episode to round it off and finish the series with. And who more important than today's guests?
Which is my lovely wife, Jennifer, and your lovely wife, Jenna. Yeah. So welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Jen.
Yeah, it's a bit surreal for us, isn't it, mate? Because like we're kind of, it's like opening Pandora's box. What are they going to say?
I know. That's the thing. But, it's like, you know, usually we have a bit of a rough plan, but I think anything could happen today.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've still got one, but we know what the score is. We'll go with the flow. So,
like anything in probably in both of our relationships, we may as well rip up that script and just throw it out the window.
That's it. I think we've all been through a lot with our partners, haven't we? So you kind of have this, you know, this ideal situation that's going to happen when you get married, and it doesn't happen. And you ladies have seen us through it. So it's just get chatting, I guess. Let's just get chatting. So should we do intros? Do you want to do intros just so people know what your voice sounds like?
Yeah.
Otherwise, because if they listen to it on a podcast, they'd be like, well, who's that? So let's start with my lovely wife, Jen.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. So I'm Kieran's wife.
There you go. That's nice and short. Not much else to say there. They already know everything about you. So if you hear that voice, that's Jen.
If you hear this fucking Londoner.
Oi. Right. No, hello, everybody. I am the other Jen, Jenna.
Jim.
Thank you for having us, guys.
That's all right. But thank you for coming.
Welcome to the studio.
Welcome to the studio, yeah. thanks for coming on. It means a lot to us. I know we've always said that we'd like to get you on, and you could have said no because, you know, your own ladies and have your own private lives. So it's really means a lot to us, and it will mean a lot to the people that are listening because me and Sean have had a lot of contact from wives supporting husbands going through or facing infertility. So I know this is going to be an episode that's really well taken. So thank you.
Yeah.
So let's start right at the beginning. Okay. Before me and Sean had our diagnosis, what was your knowledge of infertility for men? Let's just start with that question. So Jen, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think for me, there wasn't any knowledge. It was just I knew that I had my own fertility issues, and all the conversations, all the appointments just came through for me. So it was, right, Jennifer, let's get you sorted. Let's get your tests done. It was very much an afterthought of, right, we'll give you your prescription next time. Let's just run a test on your husband. And that was where we then found that your tests weren't anywhere near what we thought they would be. So it's very much an afterthought. There was very little planning for what could be and what those tests could result in. So I don't think I knew much at all because I just thought, it's me. I'm the one with the issue. Therefore, we'll get me sorted and there we are. We'll be on our merry little way and it'll all be right. But it obviously wasn't. But there wasn't any preparation or any kind of, this could not happen. This plan might have to pause if we find anything. It was just, let's just run that because that's the last thing to check off, and off we go.
We were quite far into it by then, weren't we?
Yeah.
And it was generally like we weren't expecting anything from me, nothing. It was that last moment of let's just check your husband. It obviously took me down a completely different rabbit hole to you, but it took us both by surprise, didn't it? Mm. So that just having a bit of prior knowledge would have really helped. Like, we don't think it is, Kieran, but if it is, maybe this is the route we'll go down instead. But yeah, you had nothing, did you?
No, and it was the fact that all of the appointments came through for me and none of the appointments came through for the two of us. So it was very much, this is something that you, Jennifer, are going down rather than us going down it together. And I think it was right at the very last appointment that they said, right, for the next one, you need to bring your husband just so he can do this test. This is what we'll book in for. So it was very much a, it was my issue and I had to tackle it on my own until he was allowed to an appointment. And that was where we then found that things weren't anywhere near as normal as we were expecting them to be.
Yeah. It was strange because I wasn't allowed to any of your appointments at all. And I do know that's only just clicked.
That's mad.
Yeah.
It's only just clicked that. It's the fact of it was you, wasn't it? It was set up in such a way that you had to encounter it on your own, which hopefully is changing now. But it was very much so 12 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think if you think back to it, like you wouldn't have been able to get the time off work to come to my appointments because the appointments were for me. So it'd be like me going to a dermatology appointment and expecting Kieran to be able to have an appointment the time off work, paid time off work to come to a dermatology appointment. Like it just wouldn't happen. Yeah. Whereas this was something that we were both going through together. It was a joint venture and yet it was just the appointments were for me. Therefore you couldn't have the time off because why would you?
Well, that's the thing with fertility and what employers need to understand. And I appreciate that maybe in this scenario, it's kind of very early stages and maybe not fertility treatment per se, but when you do get to that point, you're in it together and you want to be there at the appointments together. And there's still not that recognition by and large that you're not there by choice. But when you are, no matter what the source is, you're in it as a couple.
That was never promoted all the way through it. And I know we are going back not over a decade and that, and things have come on, but it was never like, and please bring your husband.
Which is just seems insane. Like, why wouldn't you bring your partner?
Yeah.
You're trying to raise or bring a child and bring a family into the world more often than not, or not in some of our scenarios. It takes two to try and do that. But, you know, we've all had to have the extended doctors and things like that, donor to help and things. It's just, why wouldn't you have your partner there to see it through? Bizarre. That's so bizarre.
I mean, I don't know, like, was that the same for you guys? Were you invited or was it a case
of... It was a little different in ours. Because...
I mean, going back to the initial question, so like Jen said, my personal knowledge of male factor infertility, I wasn't aware of it. It wasn't something I'd noticed, seen or heard anyone talk about. The only kind of thing I suppose I could maybe associate it to would be having known one or two people that had been going through cancer treatment, males, that then had to have sperm frozen should they want to then start a family later down the line and couldn't be successful. That was the only kind of little understanding of that world. But even that to me wasn't infertility. It was kind of like a insurance policy for them, hopefully later down the line.
What about like fertility in general? Was that on the mind?
I had friends at work, same-sex couples, women, so I was aware of fertility treatment in that sense, like two women, but not massively at the stage when we were trying of anyone else going through fertility treatment, be it for male or female. But with ours, obviously you had an inkling because of your mumps. And obviously we'd been trying for X amount of time with no joy. So when we went to the doctors, it was kind of like we need to look at both of you. So ours was slightly different
in that. That just shows the disparity in kind of fertility the fertility world, in that, so Jen's gone with her side of the issue, like for you two, but then Kieran's just not thought of as an afterthought right at the end. Whereas in mine, we've gone to the doctors together and I've said, look, I had mumps when I was 22, which I know now can impact fertility, but I didn't know at the time. And he was like, yeah, quite right. I'll refer you both on for tests. So
Actually, as you were saying that, I was thinking, I was like, yeah, they've just again automatically assumed, well, we must get the female checked, because I think, you know, 12 years ago when you guys were going through it, and I don't know how many years ago it was now when we started it.
Put my fingers and toes out.
it was always female.
Hmm.
Always female you look at first. And rightly or wrongly, I can kind of get that school of thought in a sense that, well, we're the ones that are, you know, going to grow said baby or babies. But yeah, it takes two.
It does. It does.
Yeah, two parts to create.
Well, I think historically, and it is something that we've covered on previous episodes, is that women have a lot more moving parts, a lot of different things that have always been perceived to be that can cause fertility issues. Whereas men, it was always like, well, sperm, you either have it or you don't type thing. But now we know there's a lot of different factors like count, motility, morphology, DNA fragmentation. There's a lot more things now through research that can show that can affect male fertility. Whereas,
it's wild what we've learned through our journeys. It's the J word. Did we ever come up with it?
11 minutes in. That's a new record.
I think that's a record, Dan.
What you've learned, or we've all probably learned, it's wild. Like, it's actually such a minute, like, I don't know, like, of how to actually get pregnant. Like, the science of it. Yeah, the chances. Yeah. Naturally of conceiving is mad. It happens so blooming easily for some people, doesn't it?
Well, this is it. You spend years being told at school you need to do everything possible to not have a teenage pregnancy, and going on and on about you need to do everything to prevent it. And then, like, if we think the amount of money that we spent on preventing it, when that was just money going down the drain, because we never needed any of that. You do. You spend so much time preventing it, and then all of a sudden, like, you don't even consider that at some point you're not going to want to prevent it, but actually you might be having to do so much more to try and have a pregnancy, because it just very much is preventative, and then it'll just happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't just happen.
Touching on that, like, when you say, you know, you learn at school about it, and I've actually said, like, since we've been through it, I'm like, I feel like they need to start saying in schools and sex education, like you just said, Jen, like, you might encounter issues, be aware of, you know, boys and girls, like, be aware of what might cause you issues, like, particularly with chaps, you know, depending on what underwear you use, going in the jacuzzi, this, that, and the other, you know, you're not going to think of that as a young lad. You're not. But later down the line, you might wish, oh, I wish Mrs. Miggins had told me that in sex ed or whatever. Like, it would be nice to see in schools that kind of, information or seed planted, for want of a better phrase.
Well, it's like the actual, they're doing PSHE now. And, like, it's covered in a lesson, like, briefly. Right?
Oh, it is? Okay, great.
They'll do it, but they'll do it in that lesson. They'll do something like infertility, but they'll also cover something like the menopause and a few other things in one lesson. So it's just, like, briefly covered. Mm. Where actually, like, it needs to be, it almost needs, like, a workshop for the boys to do. Right? And the girls as well, like, you know. If, you know, statistics are right, half the girls there'll be girls out there that have husbands that have this issue. So, the girls need education on it as well. But I remember my very early kind of education on it was just thinking it was funny having a test tube baby. Like, that word was like, oh, that's funny. Imagine that. And you have this image of a baby in a test tube. It doesn't work like that. Something out of it. something out of some like Cartoon Network program or something, you know, but it was, it wasn't explained clear enough. No way. But also I think that part of, especially for me was, at that age, my brain wasn't mature enough to really take it in. So it needs to be, rather than done in, say, year 7 to, say, 10, it needs to be a year 11, year, you know, a college kind of thing that needs to be done. So these guys are old enough to take it in and kind of really process what's being told to them.
They are growing up quicker these days because of their exposure to more information with the internet and stuff. Like, I think in our generation, kids were kids for longer. Don't want to be that kind of, oh, in my generation. But I think it is, you know, we've got nieces and nephews who are 13 and they are like so mature, it's ridiculous. In some situations and times, but still children and others. But yeah, I think they are, it probably is a conversation that can happen a little earlier than before.
It's just a delicate subject. And I think there is conversations about it going on. Like it is being talked about at an educational level, but it just hasn't got there yet. And hopefully it will.
I don't know, because you obviously are a teacher, and in your school, when you were doing the trek to Everest base camp, you specifically were asked to go and speak. Now, if they don't have a teacher doing that, then would they have known who to ask? Like, would it have been included? I'm not sure that it's on a curriculum. I think for you, you were going and talking to the relevant pupils about it to give them that knowledge. But that was because you have this interest. Whereas, what happens to schools that nobody kind of talks about it, especially given that a lot of education is very female heavy. There's a lot more females that work. Like, if nobody's gone through that, would they? What do we do?
Well, like I said, it's just like one bullet point in the scheme of work. Like, it will just literally say infertility, male and female, and then you deliver what you know on that or what the scheme says. So it can be very brief unless you know what you're talking about. And to be fair, like, you're right, I think 99% of female teachers out there probably don't know that, and that's no knock on them. It's the fact of they just haven't experienced it to be able to say how they feel. But I think I definitely think there's change. Like, change has occurred. You know, we're doing a podcast on male infertility. I think 10 years ago that didn't exist, did it? Like, no, well, it definitely didn't, but it wouldn't have happened. The world wouldn't have maybe been open for that conversation. So we are in the right directions, and we've talked about this quite a few times, haven't we, Sean, about we are in that right direction, but it's going to take time. Unless we keep banging the drum, it could potentially take longer. I mean, look how long it took people to take mental health seriously. You know, despite all the statistics saying that actually male mental health is the leading cause of death in men over 50 or something like that. It's something shocking. Is it under 50?
Yeah.
But it's absolutely shocking that it's taken that long. But we're doing the right things. And this little episode, you know, it's an hour and a half of our time, but it will last for all time, won't it? People will be able to get on it and listen and, you know, help them out.
Yeah. So and in it terms is changing. Of... Like, I was just thinking back to when you did your trek to Everest, and Seb did some sponsors, he did a little sponsored walk, and he stood up in front of his class and explained it. Now, obviously, Seb doesn't, I don't think he'd be able to explain about morphology and motility, but he stood up and explained that some dads want to be dads and they can't be dads normally, so therefore they need a bit of help. And the fact that he stood up in front of his, what would he have been in year one or something?
It would have been year one,
And he stood up in front of the rest of his class and told them that that's why he was doing this sponsored walk. Like, he knows that he is a baby that was created very specially. Like, he doesn't know the full ins and outs, but he knows about IVF, and therefore, like, he will talk about it. And maybe that is the way, like, you guys are doing it kind of to men that are hopeful to be fathers, or men that have been through a journey. And then, like, as we've got more children, that maybe the families are talking about the IVF and or the assistance that they had, maybe maybe it will get easier to discuss, so it won't just be down to schools to discuss it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's amazing that you did that. I love that.
Such a good lad.
I think there's probably somebody or a family knows another family or a friend or whatever that has been through or going through the sort of IVF world. Yeah. And then there are the conversations to the younger people in the family. So like you say, I think eventually there will be that understanding. But again, what you guys are doing, like with the pod and all your other bits and bobs, is it wasn't there. It wasn't there for either of you when you were going through what you were going through. And now it is. So it's amazing, though. It is amazing. And that, like, there was nothing for you.
No.
And you so badly needed it.
Yeah.
And here you are. So... super proud of you both.
In terms of, like, you know, you knew it wasn't there because I know that you looked as well. So what would you have liked to have seen for me or for us when we were going through it?
I mean, I remember seeking out profiles on Instagram, particularly for myself, on like whether they were anonymous or not. You know, where people are discussing the processes and their feelings and what's happening. But there literally was nothing for men. So that massively stood out.
Mm.
So first off that, really.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, even sort of Googling, and you just didn't really find anything.
No.
Like there was nowhere to go at that time for me, or so I thought for us, was social media, Insta. There's loads of people talking about it. There's this massive sort of community in the fertility or infertility world, whatever way you want to call it. And it was all women. Mm-hmm. And even, I'm not sure that I even came across any women that were, again, whether they were anonymous accounts or not, whether they were discussing or mentioning there being any issues on their male partner's side. I don't think I ever saw that either. Because I'm sure if I had have noticed it, I probably would have latched on and been like, oh my God, we're going through the same thing. Like, can I put you in touch? But there was just nothing.
Yeah.
People, I think, had maybe started to talk a little bit more, like going back to touching on like the mental health and just men talking in general. But you still didn't really talk. You didn't want to talk. You didn't particularly want to talk to me. And I knew you weren't talking to your friends or really family. Obviously, it was only your mum that initially knew. So it's like, what do you do? I couldn't say too much to the people that I wanted to talk to. As you can probably tell, I'm quite a talker. But through respect for you, I didn't want to say too much because, and I just sort of let people assume that it was me.
You essentially shouldered the infertility for the both of us because I couldn't and wouldn't talk about it. And I think that's very common, actually, when it is male factor. And yeah, I've said it to other people, to other podcasts, on our podcast, but I thank you so much for that because I wasn't in that space to do it. So I remember you saying, like, your school friends and stuff would be asking, and you'd be like, yeah, like, we're trying, but it's not happening, or whatever words you use. But, yeah, you left it ambiguous as to why. And essentially, yeah, that question was then there.
Yeah.
And because of assumptions, like we've covered, from both the medical profession and outside of, people then more than likely would assume that it would be you.
Mm. Why is that? It seems bizarre to me. I remember, like, people that Kieran worked with in schools, I remember them saying, like, oh, it must be really hard on your wife. It must be really hard for this or that. And just assumed that it was me. Like, yeah, I did have fertility issues. Yes, I knew that. But at no point does anybody ever come, like, consider that it might not be the female. And why is it that it's okay to talk about a woman that isn't ovulating, but you don't talk about a man's fertility? Like, men can make a joke about it. You can be like, oh, you're firing blanks, it's funny. but you don't talk about it seriously. Like, it just seems to me that's absolutely bizarre that like there is this massive taboo with it. And maybe it isn't anywhere near as much, like Jen has said, the way that you guys are doing this, like there are more people talking about it. But I still think, like, what is that mentality that makes people think that if you talk about a man firing blanks, well, that's funny, but that's as far as you go. Whereas you can talk about a woman that doesn't ovulate or a woman that's like perimenopausal, you can talk about that and that's fine.
I remember distinctly, like, keeping it to myself. At work, I just kept it to myself for a long time. And like the knock-on effect of everything that went on, it basically got to the point that I didn't really function very well, did I? And it affected my work and I was getting bollockings at work and things like that. But no one put the dots together that maybe something was actually really seriously wrong with me. Like, it was just like, well, Kieran's not doing his job anymore. Yeah, we know he's going through fertility issues, but they automatically assumed it was you and there was no kind of help or support or anything. It was, now I look back at it, it was really fucking wrong. Like,
well, irrespective of whether it was you or Jen, they still, as your employers, should have been supporting you and your mental health.
Yeah.
Like,
there was, in the early parts of it, the senior team or members of the senior team knew and they were very supportive, but then they, for their own reasons, they retired and moved on. And the ones that came in just didn't have the time for it. And it was tough. It was tough. But there was, I mean, you'll say, like, you look for stuff for me, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And there was just nothing. Like, literally. I mean, we're going back 6 years before, 5 years before you started yours. And, like, there was no such thing as Instagram. It was all on Facebook. And, like, there weren't podcasts and things. There was nothing. Part of me just didn't want to engage. No. I didn't want to engage. Not at that initial processing point. Yeah, and just like you said, Jenna, about Sean, like, you just don't want to talk about it.
I think this is really important. It's really important for other blokes to hear, because, like, you might hear us talking, doing a podcast now and go, oh, they're different or whatever. They can just do it and talk about it. But it's hearing that we were, like, you know, from you two who are closest to us, we were not talking. We were completely shut down, not functioning normally. And it shows that, and that's what we do try and portray, is that it is all a process and that you can get on the other side of it. So I think it's really important now to hear that from both of the gens, actually, like, following that diagnosis, exactly what we were like. And this is, like, you know, it's unfiltered and uncoached or anything like that. Like, what did you two experience and view that was going on for us?
I think for me, I could see that you were struggling. And I mean, we're going through it at the same time, aren't we? So, like, I found it really challenging. And I had very much my mindset of, right, okay, well, this is the next bit and this is what we're going to do. And do you know what? Like, in some respects, I think I probably had a bit of tunnel vision because I was concentrating on myself. So I possibly didn't pick up on all the signs. But I could see that work was getting really tough for Kieran, and I could see that, like, where I was struggling and thought I need to have a plan, I need advice, I need answers, and I was turning to Facebook groups at that point or forums, but there wasn't that for you. Like, you were getting more and more isolated, and if I think back to it now, like, the signs were all there that he was really starting to sink, his mental health was so affected. But I think because I was so kind of consumed in my own thoughts and how difficult this was for me, I think we probably didn't come together anywhere near as much as we should have to be able to keep each other afloat. So where I was getting that support, because it wasn't there for you, I think you were sinking, whereas I was just treading the water. And I think, like, if I think back to it, I think, oh gosh, why did I not see those signs and why didn't I do anything? But then when you are going through it, like, it is so consuming. Like, it is in your thoughts every single day. You want to think, like, and I remember sitting there on, like, certain days Googling, like, this symptom has occurred. Does this mean? And, like, you couldn't get answers. There's absolutely no way that Google's going to be able to provide you with an answer, but you'll still do it to think, right, okay, well, where are we? And I think, yeah, I think that's where I kind of possibly didn't pick up anywhere near as much as I could have. But I guess for people that are going to listen to this, that are maybe going through it, like, that's fine to accept that this is really challenging. Whoever or whatever the reason for your fertility issues, like, everybody is going to handle it differently. And sometimes you might be able to feel that you can support others. And other times you might listen to a podcast like this and get your support from it, but not want to talk out and not want to discuss with anything. I mean, I remember we had cycles where we told people, and then when we had miscarriages, it was really challenging to have to support other people to accept our miscarriage. But then we had other cycles that I was like, Kieran, I don't want anybody to know about this. And that makes it really difficult, especially with work when you need some time off to go for things. But I didn't want anybody to know about it because, one, I didn't want to go through that whole difficulty again where you have to support others due to our miscarriage. But also, like, you come up with these crazy little thoughts in your mind that if I tell someone, that's going to jinx it not to work. So if I don't tell anyone, then it'll work this time. And you do, you lose kind of your, like, your sensibility with it. You kind of think, oh, well, the clinic, this is the second time that we're going through this. So the clinic know this, that we've got 3 funded cycles. Therefore, they won't let this one work, but they'll let the next one work. Like, they need to get as much money. And it's things like that that pop into your head and you think afterwards, like, of course that's not the case, but it's there when you're going through it and when you're so pressured with it.
I think, like, initially you may not have picked up on things, but you did when the shit hit the fan.
Yeah.
Like, it was then that I really needed Jen. And I was lucky that you stepped up and you, I mean, I wouldn't be here today if you hadn't have helped me and pulled me through it. But it's just recognizing those early signs, I think, and that kind of, that shutting down. It's like a computer. A computer doesn't just turn off. It goes through stages. And, you know, that may be being a bit more quieter about what you're talking about or what you want to talk about, not opening up, not being as open to discuss things, losing your sense of humor. Like, mine went, like, I kind of slowly started to lose my sense of humor, didn't I? My socialization disappeared.
These still haven't found it. Happen.
Huh?
Still haven't found it. That's cute.
You just got sad, didn't you?
Yeah, I just got sad. Really, sad. It was like, and then it we went from sad to depressive to the next stage. And it was just a gradual process. And because you're both in it together, when I was sad, Jen was sad.
Yeah.
But Jen was, like she said, she kept herself afloat. I just kind of sunk off, didn't I? But it's because there was nothing there.
I found that really powerful, actually, and such a great analogy that we are, because I've explained it similar in the past, in that I felt like it was being, like, thrown into this stream, and sometimes it was like dragging you under, other times you're just bobbing along, not really moving, but yeah, treading water or sinking, that is powerful, and it's important to acknowledge that sometimes it is a case of just looking after yourself, but you're still in the couple. But you can't pour from an empty cup. And if you're really struggling yourself, sometimes you have to kind of, like, reset, hunker down. And then by then addressing your issues, then you can better support your partner. And it's like an ebb and flow. Sometimes we're strong for both of us. Sometimes you have to be strong for yourself.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how I dealt with the initial diagnosis, or even for, like, you know, all the time after, because there's things that I can't even remember, because essentially I was in, like, shock and trauma for points.
I mean, I think there's probably things that I've even forgotten or blocked out unintentionally, I don't know, but I only really remember, like, there being 2 or 3 kind of, like, pivotal conversations between us, which sounds bizarre or not, because maybe that shows how little you spoke or wanted to talk about it in the beginning. So I think I specifically remember being sat in the garden on the table, and it was kind of like discussing, like, well, if we don't have any sperm, then should we adopt? So then it's fair. So, like, there's no DNA on either part. I kind of remember that conversation as, because I think like you said, Jen, you're kind of like, right, well, what's the plan? What's the next step? Where are we going to go? Because like you say, you're still kind of, you're going for it yourself, even though your partner's got what they've going on. So it's kind of for both of you. So I was like, right, okay, shall we foster? Shall we adopt? Do we get donor? And it, so there was that kind of conversation. I remember another conversation where you were basically really angry and wanted to know, did I have the jab for MMR? It was like you really wanted that, yeah, someone to blame at that point. You were really angry. And you were kind of blaming your mum, because yeah, you were like, well, mum would have taken me or not taken me.
I remember phoning her to try and get it. It's like, well, it's, you know, it's part of grief. It's, blame is one of the steps, and anger as well. And it's that kind of mix of both, and wanting to pin it somewhere and to blame it on someone or something. And it's, you know, it's not fair, but it's not rational either. So.
No. And then the other one, which was really bizarre, because I'm not sure what the pivotal point for you, or if it was just that split second, was when we were having the interview with the BBC in the garden, and all of a sudden he just decides, I'm going to tell the world. I'm going to tell everyone. I'm going to tell my friends. So, yeah, as soon as that interview was done, you then called everyone, and it was just like this 10-ton of bricks had just come off, and he was almost back to your old self, happy, like chilled. I mean, this was, a lot of it was through lockdown as well, yeah, which was rubbish. But yeah, it's weird. Like that, I feel like those
3 years down the line now. Three and a half.
That's what I mean. So yeah, it was such a long time. I mean, we did have some great times during COVID, and I think we've always kind of made the most of crap situations, for want of a better word. But yeah, when you think about the length of time that we went through this whole thing, that like you were down, very down, and like sad, like Kieran said. But did I notice it as much as I should have? I don't know. Like, again, like you said, Jen, because you're also focusing on everything else. Like, I would be like, right, well, if we do this, then maybe we'll have treatment on this date, and then maybe I'll be pregnant by then. And like, you do that whole thing, you're just constantly calculating stuff, or yeah, what if this, what if that? And you just get lost down these rabbit holes, and then someone else will announce a pregnancy, and then you get that
gut punch.
There's just everyone's kind of,
I think part of our problem was that, because we were both working shifts at the time, we were often like passing ships in the night, and we often had that a lot of alone time and different space, not being together through work, and that's why actually that maybe like when it came to lockdown, suddenly we were together all the time. Like that, we never had that before, really, had we?
No, for that's a long true. Time, maybe it sort of forced.
Yeah, just, and then we were going on our walks, our 1 hour a day, and we were talking a lot more. And actually, what that day that the BBC were going to interview us, it was actually about the impact of COVID on fertility, because it all got shut down. But I had listened to a podcast that morning before they were due to come round and film, and it was all about this guy had been for a life-changing accident, become paralysed, and what he was doing after. He's called Ben Tansley. He's an absolute legend. I've spoken to him a few times since. I'm determined to get him on this pod because his story was so important in mine. And it was what he's doing now. He's like, this has happened. It was all about acceptance. He's now helping others who are in that same situation. And it was like a light bulb. And I was just like, I can do that. And to put it in context, and I hadn't even spoken to anyone, and suddenly these camera crew come around and they're in our back garden, and I'm splurging 3.5 years of pain and infertility and shattered identities to them. And
none of it was used, but that's not the point. It was such a massive thing though for you. I was like,
literally all stayed on the cutting room floor because it wasn't their agenda. They were there about COVID and fertility, and but they did, like, there was two kind of youngish guys, like the kind of presenter and the film, the cameraman. In fairness to them, they were like, they just said, thank you for sharing that. That was like so impactful. And then, yeah, that night I was just suddenly phoning like all of my friends, telling them, and because I was like, oh, bugger, what if this goes out on telly before I've told anyone? So it kind of like pushed me into it from that respect, from telling mates. But
oh, you had some beautiful, beautiful messages from your friends, didn't you? Like, oh, it makes me feel a bit emotional thinking about it now, actually. I didn't think I'd get like that, but you did.
Yeah.
Ugh, why am I crying?
I often... like speak to, I won't embarrass them. Well, no, you know, but I often will say to the some who had really, who sent me really impactful messages, or even at the time on the phone calls, of like about me. And again, it just was reaffirming everything I'd come to realize myself, that it didn't change me. Mm-hmm. What they said, it's still now. So this is now 2020, so 4 years on. I still think about it all the time, exactly what they said and how they received that information and how they treated it with empathy and compassion. It's just,
I think,
amazing
for men as well, though. I think it shows what a good group of friends you've got. And I don't know how you felt with any of your friends, like both of you, but like that level of maturity in those responses that you got back from finally opening up kind of solidified, like, yeah, I've got solid group of mates, family. Like, I don't know if that like kind of like helped think, yeah, we can get through this, whatever.
Maybe I'll read one out. I saved the messages I got. So, you've always been the bravest, also stupidest at times out of all of us. Without sounding soft, and again, like, you know, how blokey is that? Like, you know, we afraid to sound a little bit, but I've always envied your ability to not care what others think, do what you think is right regardless of how that affects you as a person. I can't think of a better ambassador than you to speak out about it and to help other people affected by the same difficulties. You're going to be the most amazing dad, bear in mind this is before we even were pregnant. X and Y would take you as their parents in a heartbeat. And Lucy and I also wouldn't question their choice. Lots of love. It's just like questions, messages like that.
Amazing.
Just literally, that is like the enlightening moment, really, of just realizing all this time that I've been reverberating around this, this pain and these thoughts of feeling less and feeling angry, like you said, and like feeling less of a man to you. Because I remember saying to you, you can go if you want.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because, yeah, that was one of the things.
When I said it to Jen, I genuinely meant it, even though I know it broke my heart. But I wanted her to fulfill her, I don't know, this natural urge to be a mum. But what you don't realise is there's so many ways to do it, you know, to be a parent. And going back to your message, mate, it's an amazing message, and what a wonderful friend, man. We found that when we started talking out about it, people were really like happy to talk about it. Our close friends, like, when you know, you always say, you know, you should be able to count your real friends on one hand. And those five people that we talked to were very open and very kind of supporting. So, you know, anyone that's listening to this thinking, are people going to, you know, push them away or reject what they've got to say? Your real true friends are going to pull you in. They're going to pull you in and look after you. But it's having the bravery to do it. And we've talked about bravery before, haven't we, mate? How actually when you're doing it, it doesn't feel great, but afterwards, like, you get the benefits of it. And to openly talk to your close friends, talk to your family, if possible, is only going to benefit you. You know, you're going to get that comfort from them, even though it's an incredibly hard thing to do.
And I think when you do start talking out and you do start like telling people and letting people know, you quickly realise who's going to be able to have the ability to support you, or who might come back with, like, a bit of a, well, I know so-and-so and it worked for them. And you quickly realise that they're the people that, do you know what? They don't know what to say. So they think, well, if we tell you this, it'll give you some hope.
Yeah.
And they're not the people that you want to, especially when you're going through it and you don't want to hear about your granny's neighbour's cleaner's dog or something that it happened for. Like, you just, you don't want to hear other people's stories, so you know that they're not the ones to support you. But like, that message is amazing.
Yeah.
And like, I know that people that haven't been through it, they still have the ability to give you that support. We became quite friendly with a couple who we met at Born. I don't even remember how. I think I met her on a Facebook group, and we started going out for dinner, and it was amazing because I remember like there was this bit of a saying that it's that infertility is like an exclusive group that you should never have to be a part of, but once you're in it, like it's something that you'll stay in forever. And I remember thinking, well, that's it. We've got to form new friendships with people who are going through the same, because then they understand. And it was amazing to like have that ability to go out for meals with them and be able to discuss. And we used to laugh at silly things. Like, I think you and Sean have been in the same room in Born. This other person had also been in the same room, and they were comparing materials and everything. And me and Louise would just be like, oh my gosh, here we go again, hearing all about it. But it was amazing to have that. But there was also other people that had never been through anything like this that still were able to give us that support. But
yeah.
You wouldn't have been able to get that support had you not have opened up and asked.
Yeah, I distinctly remember speaking to, you know, one of my best friends. I'll mention his name because I know he listens. He listens to this just because he knows how much it means to me. My friend Andy. And I remember being in the pub with him after everything gone through, and I've been through a really rough time. And it was after Seb had been born. He knew something was going on, but I sat there and really talked to him about how I felt. And he was like, "What the fuck, didn't you say something?" And I said, "I did." He said, "No, but why haven't you just said what you've just said to me?" And he said, "I don't know what the right thing to say is, but I'm here to support you." And that's all I needed to hear from a close friend. Like, he didn't know what to say. He hadn't experienced it. He's quite straight talking, isn't he, Andy? Like, but he was like, "I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. Just talk." And we sat and we talked for hours. And when we did walk, well, when I said we walked up the street, we pulled back up the street and you got there. It was a proper moment in the pub, you know, like everyone has them. You know, anyone listening to this, you have an inkling who that person will be in your life, or those people are that you can talk to. Be brave and talk to them. You know,
and for anyone, if like, for the Andes out there of the world, it's like, what a legend to say, "I don't know what to say, but just talk." That is that's all you have to do, is just listen. Because often if someone is, whether it's infertility or whatever else, if someone's opening up to you about the biggest challenge they're going through in life, it's most likely they just want to talk.
Yeah. I mean, him and his wife are godparents to Sebi, and, you know, I trust them with my life with Sebi, you know. And Enya, like, they'd do anything for us, wouldn't they? But it's that, you know, there are those people in your life, even if you can't find them or think they wouldn't. Just talk to someone. Everyone has that inkling of who it would be. I wish I'd just talked to him more honestly a bit earlier. And it would have just given me someone to talk to, because I know he would have talked. But it's a powerful thing to have someone to listen to, and someone that's not going to make any judgments. It's
like an amazing thing. Yeah, to just listen and not be like, "Oh, well, I know so-and-so that was going through it." And that is like the worst possible thing. Whatever it is, you just want people to listen. Shut up, listen. And if you are going to say something, just let it be like, "Mate, that must be fucking awful."
Yeah. I do generally think when people try and give you, you know, this positive scenario that they've experienced about so-and-so and this happened, they're just trying to give you that positivity when sometimes you just don't need
it. Yeah, it comes from a good place, but it's just like, that's not what's needed.
Yeah, it does. So if someone does say that, take it as they're trying to be positive. Yeah. And then just reassess and realise that maybe they're not the right person to support you at this moment in time.
He's saying that it's not okay to punch someone in the face if they tell you that you just move relax. Yeah. Naturally. Yeah, is that not acceptable?
I remember a couple of times we'd go out for dinner or go out in a group or something, and I'd get in the car afterwards and I'd be like, quite happy. We've had a little social situation. I look across and old Thunder face here is like, did you hear what she said to me? I was like, oh, here we go. But now we can laugh about it. But at the time, I generally have to talk you down sometimes, like with hormones kicking in and stuff like that, you know, especially if you'd started your injections and stuff like that. It was like, no, I'll do it back.
You feel patronized, don't you? But actually, like you say, people, they don't know what to say. So they say something to fill that gap of not knowing what to say. And now we can look back at it and we can laugh at it and we can say, do you know what? Like, they meant well. But when you're going through it, like, you literally, you want to rage. Like, you literally can't cope with that person that has said the most stupidest thing to you, or that's what you feel like at that time. Mm. But then there are people that say the right things, or they don't say anything, they just listen. Yeah. And that's what you kind of need, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what I got from my therapy in the end. You know, I didn't have that person to talk to, but my therapist that I went to speak to just sat and listened, and I was able to just pour it out, you know. And I would have preferred to have got that from someone that was maybe a bit more emotionally involved with me. That wasn't you, obviously. I think we've said it all series, haven't we?
Yeah.
Find someone to talk to.
Find someone, you know, to sit in the mud with. Just to air it all out, who's going to just go, do you know what, that's really shit. Yeah, I'm here for you. Said, like, sit in the mud. But I've just thought of a question for the two gens. So, obviously, in both of our situations, we were a couple before we knew about this. You know, some people might come into a relationship having known, you know, that they have issues because of whatever previous illnesses or whatever else, or maybe a previous relationship where it came to light and unfortunately didn't work out. But in our situations, we didn't know. We were then dealt this hand and we've come out the other side of it. So would you say that you've got your husband back, your original?
No, I haven't got my original husband back. I've got better.
Hell of an answer.
It's true though. Like, yes, I've got my original Sean, but you have grown, or we have grown as a couple. You have grown as a man and are a dad and an incredible dad. A bit emotional again. I'm sure you guys have both said this several times throughout the pod. Despite everything he had to go through, wouldn't change it for the world, because we wouldn't be where we are now with all of our wonderful children, but also you guys doing this incredible work, helping so many other people get through this fucking awful place.
Mm.
Which, you know, I hope people that listening do realise you will get through. Whatever it looks like, you will get through.
Yeah.
And I wish, everyone the best that's listening.
How about you, Jen?
Yeah. I think, like, even if somebody had said to me before, like when Kieran and I first met, when apparently I kicked you the first time that I'd seen you, he tells everyone that. Apparently, that's why he's like broke many years later. But if somebody had said to me, right, I've got this crystal ball and this is going to happen and you might not be able to have a family together, like, it wouldn't have changed anything. Like, you go through, I'm going to use the J word again, you go through a journey when you're in a relationship with someone. And, you know, it's not always going to be easy. And, like, just because we've been through difficulties with fertility, like, it's not anything that I would have wanted to be different. Like, everything happened in my head, everything happens for a reason. Like, we could have had other things happen, like health things, and you don't know what's going to happen. But I definitely feel like there was a point where I felt that I'd lost, like, part of Kieran, and I was just like, what can I do to support this, especially when he wasn't in work, he couldn't function with work, couldn't function with life when we were at our lowest. And I think there was at a certain point, I thought, if this doesn't happen, as much as my head was, I need this plan and we're going to adopt, that's going to be the thing that we do next, so we've got this plan. Like, if we hadn't have been successful in the end, I think I had that worry of, what's going to happen because he's so low. I need this to be working and I need to do everything that I can to make sure that this does happen in the end, because I don't know what will happen with Kieran if it doesn't. But like you said, Jenna, like now, if I reflect back on it, the person that Kieran is now is so different to that person during that journey. Like from the beginning when I first met you to now, like you wouldn't have known much about fertility had we not have gone through the difficulties that we've had. But the amount that you do know and the amount that you do to try and support others is amazing. Like it definitely shapes you. And I wouldn't have chosen any different route to go on. We went on it for some reason. Don't know why, but maybe this was it. Maybe this is what your calling was, like for both of you guys to start supporting others and ensure that other people don't feel as lonely and as isolated as you did when you were both going through it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lou. It's that's why we do it. Like I've said it before and Sean said it. I just don't want anyone else to feel like I did, because it's a fucking horrible place. And to think that at one point I felt the world would be better off without me in it, it's hard. But we're moving forward and we're doing well.
That's the main point, isn't it? Is that we, as in all four individuals, but as couples, it's about moving forward. And it might not be the direction that you thought you were going to go in. You've taken diversions. Sometimes you might have to go sideways, but you're still going forward. It's still progression. And you end up moving forward in life and together. And that's, again, it's the key message and the hope that we try and give others, is not only to obviously make them feel less alone, but just to see the other side of every aspect, mentally, physically, as a family, as a couple. There is a way through, and it might not be quick, it might not be easy, but there is a way.
It is easy for us all to say that now, and I have no doubt there might be some listeners that are like, can't fucking see the wood from the trees, like, how am I ever going to get through this? And like, just, hang on in there.
But that's what, you know, like... Yeah. We try and reference that, and that's why it's important to have your perspective today in where we were. And it's like when you mentioned the day where I just suddenly opened up, it's like that was 3.5 years of not talking at all, of just being angry and silent. So, you know, again, that's a key message, is that it's not easy, it's not quick, but I think,
it's the time as well. Yeah, it's not quick.
Yeah.
Which makes it harder.
We live in a world where we can get anything we want whenever we want. Like, you know, if I want a new pair of shoes, I go and get them. If I want to buy a new house, I go and look for one. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? These things that can just happen. Like, we're so used to things just happening. And when it comes to something like processing your infertility, it can't just happen, and you have to take that time to process. And I have often thought about that, like, are people listening? There'll be a couple of people listening to this and just think, but it's easy to say, you know, it will all be all right, but it generally will be. You've got to stick on your track, you've got to stick, just keep going.
Yeah,
don't give up, because it's when you give up.
It's important to acknowledge that
it might not be
the outcome that you want or expect, but and like, you know, you can't guarantee anything. But what we are trying to say is that you will be okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I think we've both told very different stories this series, haven't we, mate? Like, your outcome is different to ours, your background is different to ours or mine, but it's we've got the same outcome.
Yeah.
We're both parents, and that's what we wanted. And we wouldn't change anything. You know? They bring us joy every day, even though they might frustrate us every day when they get us up at 5 o'clock this morning.
It counts as getting up if you don't really ever go to sleep. I think this is what
We're currently going through a thing with Enya, where Enya just comes into our bed
Jenna every goes night. In
and she
I just go into Evelyn's and stay there. And Sean has the bed to himself, which is nice, isn't it?
That'd be lovely.
Oh, nice. But that's what I go into. Me and Enya swap, don't we? Yeah. I will go into Enya's. Nice. And Enya will come into our house.
I wouldn't mind, but like we've got a massive bed. And yet Enya is like right in here and I can't move and I'm falling out of the bed. There's the rest of the bed. You disappear and I'm like, right, okay, yes.
I've got to get my sleep.
Any other way.
I've got to get my sleep. I'm up training in the morning.
And I do what?
Yeah.
So on that note, look, I think it would be good. Have we got, if there are any, you know, any guys listening to this or any wives listening, partners listening to this, that kind of, I've got a guy, I've got a husband, got a partner that is going through a difficult time at the moment. What would, from a female perspective, have you got any advice for them in terms of how they can help their partners, I guess?
I think for me, I'd say talk. Having that opportunity to talk, finding out what your partner needs, because some people, they will want, like some guys might want to talk to others. Other guys might want to listen to a podcast. Like they might not want to open up or talk to anyone. But I think we've all highlighted today that when you started talking, that's when the help came. And when you're going through it, there's reasons why, like for you, Sean, you said it was 3.5 years until you opened up. For Kieran, I don't know how long it was. It was a long time, but you knew about everything, but you couldn't open up. You didn't want to. And so it's absolutely fine to not want to talk, but having access to things like this podcast, you don't have to tell anybody that you've listened to the podcast, but you can listen and gain some insight. And I think that's it. Like, knowledge is power, isn't it? Like, you can be struggling and you don't have to talk to anyone in particular, but if you can get a little bit of knowledge around the situation, even just like some of the things that you two have spoken about in this series, there'll be things that might provide that reassurance. So if women or people are going through this and they think their partner needs some support, then this is an amazing facility for people to listen to. But there are other people out there and reaching out, like, look at you two and the work that you do outside of this. Like, you know so many people. Like, yes, there are things that people can attend if they've got the courage to, like the fertility show. Like, lots of people won't want to attend that, but there's a huge network. And you always, like, we've laughed about the situation where you say, well, I know so-and-so and they did this, but people always know somebody. And it's that opening up. And if you don't feel that you can open up to anybody and specifically talk about it, then talk to your partner and see what they need and see if you can get that help. Because I wish that I would have done that. Like, I think I did in some restraints. I did like talk to the girls that I was talking to and say, is anybody else like aware of anything that your partners can gain access to? But I didn't really push it. And I think that would have helped.
I mean, I would probably echo a lot of what you said. Obviously, talking is paramount. However, I think you also need to give your partner that space, because depending on what stage they're at in, you know, the sort of grief side of things, like, you know, if you're angry, you're not necessarily going to be receptive to me. Or, you know, any ladies listening saying, oh, I've found this amazing podcast, or there's this amazing book, or this amazing account, or, you know, whatever it is that you can find, which is all genuinely great, helpful information. If they're not in the right place to receive it, it's just going to be rejected. And it is finding that balance of, right, are they ready to receive any of this stuff? Do they need a bit more space? And that is obviously where the talking and listening side of thing comes in. I would say the sort of space talking and where it's appropriate to try and show them or introduce them what tools and things there are available. I mean, I'm not saying go and buy a whole bag of books and be like, here you are, love, look what I found, go and read all them. Because some people might be like, fuck off, you pushed me further back, like, you found me up even more, not interested. Because, you know, there have been times where you've been like, oh, Jen, I think you could really do with reading this or whatever. And I'd be like, it might rub me up the wrong way. But
I got like super into like self-development during all this fertility stuff. And it was like, I felt like a bit of a pusher with it after. It's like, check this book out. It's amazing. But I've chilled out a bit.
Probably because you've gauged that it might not be my kind of thing. So yeah,
but on that note, you know, and you said it, is one thing that I've always, one thing that I've said many a time about how you dealt with it is that initially I think you did try and push because you wanted to move on quicker, and you had that kind of like vision of what you wanted and how to get there, and you tried to push, you realised that was pushing me further in, and you learned to give me that space that you mentioned. And that was key, because then when there might have been like little shards of light that I was willing to open up, you're then more like gentle with it. And it was that, it's learning. Because you know, you have to learn new ways of supporting your partner, and you did that dynamically. And because we wouldn't have expected to have to go through that. And you adapted really well to me, what I needed at certain times. So, thank you.
Welcome. I don't know about you guys, but like we had quite similar, and I really struggled to like get on the same line as Kieran, because I just wanted that plan and I wanted the movement, whereas Kieran needed to kind of process things and have that time. And we really found the counselling that was offered by the clinic that we were with like so beneficial, because she gave us both that ability to kind of listen to each other and see where each other were sitting. And I think it wasn't until that point that I was able to see that my absolute desire and need to have this plan of, right, in 3 months' time, this is where we'll be, and we need to start this and we need to start that. Like, I was able to then see it. So I think that would be my other suggestion. If you've got the ability to have some counselling from the clinic that you're under, if you are under a clinic, access it. Because for us, we found that so beneficial. I don't think we would have got through it without that.
We weren't butting heads on the subject, but we needed a mediator in a way, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because I was so on my path and you were so on your path, but we were supporting each other, but not actually coming together with what we actually needed to. So we needed that. I mean, it was a really important 6 weeks, that treatment. You know, I've talked about it loads on here. But I think they're really good advice. I think it's really good advice, both of you, in terms of, because it's nice.
I mean,
it'll be important for people listening to hear that coming from our wives. They hear it from us, but actually to hear it from the person that supported us through it is key. And I know there'll be people, I generally know there'll be people that, you know, will be waiting for this episode.
Yeah.
We've had contact, haven't we, mate, about people that, partners that are struggling. It's tough.
Yeah, exactly. It's an important and it's a really important perspective, because of course it's the Male Fertility Podcast, but we didn't do this on our own by any stretch of the imagination. We needed you, and you've given a very valuable insight into what your thoughts and feelings were. So thank you both. It's a perfect way to end.
Thank you for everything. Because, you know, me and Sean, if like, he wouldn't, you know, Jen, you hadn't supported him and you hadn't supported me, Jen, who knows what would have happened. So thank you. So I guess that's the bit where we kind of bring it to an end, didn't it?
Yeah, it's been emotional.
Yeah, well, that one has been emotional.
It has been emotional. I did get a little bit emotional. I wasn't expecting to. No, I just really hope whatever we have advice and just hearing us talk has really helped any of your listeners. And I don't know about you, Jen, but I'd be more than happy to come on again and like have some questions. Like if people want to send some questions. Kieran's like, hold on a minute, yeah, girls. This was a one time only.
I would like to. We talked about it before, haven't we, mate? About all getting in the studio and recording this, actually recording a face to face one, because I think that would be really good. But maybe next time we'll pick a topic that maybe challenge us really during our treatments, and have those kind of discussions.
Yeah,
you can be guest co-hosts or something.
Oh no, I think me and Jen are gonna we can be the hosts and you can be our guests that come on. Like we could take over.
you ask us questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, but you're only allowed 30 seconds each, and we're gonna do the rest.
As you've seen and heard, we're more than happy to fill the air with our voices.
Jeremy Paxman ain't got shit.
So, this is the last one for a while, isn't it, buddy?
Not too long. 4 week break.
Four week break, and then we'll be back. But we'll get everything sorted and we'll put it all up on social media when things are going to be launched.
Yeah.
Plenty coming in next series, buddy.
But yeah, in the meantime, if you want to, yeah, oh yeah, soon it'll be live from the jungle.
So if anyone wants to get in contact with us before then, mate, what's the Instagram?
The Instagram is at the Male Fertility Podcast, and there's always email, which is...
The Male Fertility Podcast at gmail.com.
Nice.
There you go. Smooth.
It was. Yeah, it's been epic, and we can't thank you both enough for coming on. It's a really good way to round off the series. So thank you to Jen and Jen.
And also, mate, I want to thank you, mate. Like, you've worked really hard and getting everything together, and it's been a pleasure doing this first series with you.
Absolutely.
So
agree, Mom.
Let's keep rolling. Big things to come.
Yeah. Thank you to you as well. We've cheered each other along when we've needed it, and we did it.
We did it.
Well done on the end of season one.
Right, and then we better say goodbyes. Are we going to do the usual goodbye?
Kieran loses his mind when it comes to saying bye. He just for some reason he can't do it.
I cannot say goodbye. I'll see you next season, mate.
Wow. On that bombshell.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.